welcome, and thank you for coming. A month ago, this was just a twinkle in my eye, but today it's for real, and thank you very much for coming. We've just got three speakers to come, briefly, you'll be glad to hear, but can you turn to your song sheet for a minute? Take you through the words and the idea which will be done at the end of the proceedings, okay? Have you got this sorted out?
We can't see these out.
Dead easy.
I've only got 2 pairs of hands.
Wake up. Mm-hmm. Now,
I've got
now.
Already, yeah.
Now. To build a better future, we need to start right now. Make it greener. Make it cleaner. Make it faster. Do it.
Now.
To build a better future, and we need to start right now.
Now.
What's it waiting? What is it taking? We must be wise, pick up our minds and do it.
Now.
I've been gardening for 17 years in North East Derbyshire, and I've seen the climate change for real firsthand. And to be honest, to begin with, I thought global warming would be alright, because we've got a vineyard up there, and the grapes were like getting ripe a bit earlier. I thought, oh, this is alright. And then, there was three conversations I was having with people, the first one, That will help. Right, because he wants me to say things like, you know, the daffodils flower earlier every year, and the roses flower later, and there's bugs. That is true. But what's more important, I had 1 year, I picked the grapes, about 5 years ago, and I took them down to Tony Spiriat, who's been growing grapes for about 30 years. And we looked at the grapes were ready 3 weeks earlier and were starting to rot. And he looks at me, he says, this isn't normal. This climate change is happening faster than we ever thought. And it's everybody who grows things, everybody makes their business with plants, because plants look at the climate closely. They know it's changing. I was on the Gardener's Question Time panel with a guy from Ferndale, and he said a few years ago they had floods there. They lost £3,000 worth of stock. So they invested in things to stop the floods coming through the shop. First time they did it, they've used those 10 times since. It keeps flooding, and then this week, Wednesday, a guy came along, horticultural supplier, and said, oh, have you seen that happening? He says, the winds are taking the roofs off glass houses. Never happened until a few years ago. The winds are getting stronger. And that, he said, well, how can that be, you know, that climate change is doing all these things, temperature, wind, floods, and the way up, because we found out last week, didn't we, that the earth went up 1 degree. But 1 degree is not really enough, is it? It's not frightening enough numbers to get people terrified. You know, 2 degrees is safe, 2 degrees isn't safe. Right? But if you think of the energy required to heat a planet up 1 degree, if you think of a planet as a snow dome, I've got an elf snow dome here to represent a planet. Right, and what temperature is particles vibrating and moving. And when you heat up a whole planet 1 degree, things go a bit bonkers. And the winds get up, and the weather systems change. And we notice S months, like hottest month, coldest month, driest month, because those 2 cold winters we had, they were climate change as well. And it's all coming in. We had the hottest day ever in July this year. We had the hottest November day. I mean, you don't need to know it. 1st of November, it was 22 degrees. It's happening really, really quickly. This climate's changing very quickly. And we've got a wonderful Eiffel Tower here that you've followed here. And you can't help thinking about Paris and thinking about those terrible events 2 weeks ago in Paris. Well, I looked at the 2003 was the hottest year we've ever had on this planet until last year. By the way, this year is going to be even hotter than last year. 2003, they had a heat wave in France. And so I looked up the death toll of the heat wave. We've all got a figure in our minds from 2 weeks ago. The official one from the French Health Service was 14,802 people died in the heat wave in one summer. That's climate change really happening. And if you think that France is a little bit far away from us, this is Monday's second star. 698 deaths due to air pollution. I'm sick and tired of politicians wondering who they're going to bomb next for our security when our climate is changing at a ridiculous rate and they're doing nothing about it. Liz Busby, that's the one we're here. Okay, politicians, Amber Rudd. Right, we're sending Amber Rudd out to us. She announced the other day that she was closing in 10 years coal-fired power stations. Yay, that's going the right way. And she's going to replace them with gas-fired power stations. Is she stupid? It's like saying she's going to run us over with a car instead of a truck. You know, you need to have renewable energy. That's the main thing, renewable energy. They've done 12 changes since this government's been here, cutting benefits of renewable energy. She's cut the feed-in tariffs for onshore wind. 250 projects were cut straight away. Only three are continuing. It's ridiculous the way she's going. She's going completely the wrong way. And the only way they're going to do anything about it is if people come and protest. And that's the only thing we've got. What can we do? Oh yes, and the other thing, so we're going to learn that protesting works from Margie, because they're coming to Derbyshire. They want to frack in Derbyshire. They want more gas out of the ground. We are not going to get greenhouse gases down by getting fossil fuels out of the ground and burning more of them. But we're not going to let them frack in Derbyshire. Margie's going to tell us how. Is there more? High winds. We had the highest winds in the Western Hemisphere this month, October 24th. The highest winds, and that was Patricia. The highest winds in the Southern Hemisphere was Cyclone Pam. It's happening now. It's real. And we've got to make our leaders realise that the climate is changing. And we are not from political parties, we're from different groups, religions, faiths, and we are all coming together to say, save our planet, act now on climate change.
That's an authentic local voice, somebody on the job. Now we're going to hear from the Pope. You thought he was in Uganda, but no, he sent his personal representative, and here we're going to have a bit of what the Pope has written to the world, and Father Matthias is going to read it for us.
The actual letter that the Pope wrote was 100 pages, and 100,000 words, so I won't be reading all those. However, I have selected just a few words that Pope Francis addressed to everybody, if anyone wants to listen. Laudato si, mi signori, praise be to you, my Lord. In the words of this beautiful canticle, St. Francis of Assisi reminds us that our common home is like a sister with whom we share our life, and a beautiful mother who opens her arms to embrace us. This sister now cries out to us because of the harm we have inflicted on her by our irresponsible use and abuse of the goods with which God has endowed us. We have come to see ourselves as her lords and masters, entitled to plunder her at will. The violence present in our lives, wounded by sin,
also reflected in the symptoms of sickness evident in the soil, in the water, in the air, and in all forms of life. This is why the earth herself, burdened and laid waste, is among the most abandoned and maltreated of our poor. We have forgotten that we ourselves are dust of the earth. Our very bodies are made up of her elements. We breathe her air, and we receive life and refreshment from her waters. Nothing in this world is indifferent to us. Now, faced as we are with global environmental deterioration, I wish to address every person living on this planet. I would like to enter into dialogue with all people about our common home. I believe that St. Francis is an example par excellence of care for the vulnerable and of an integral ecology lived out joyfully and authentically. He is the patron saint of all who study and work in the area of ecology. He is also much loved by non-Christians. He was particularly concerned for God's creation and for the poor and outcasts. He loved and was deeply loved for his joy, his generous self-giving, his open-heartedness. He was a mystic and a pilgrim who lived in simplicity and in wonderful harmony with God, with others, with nature, with himself. He shows us how inseparable the bond is between concern for nature, justice for the poor, commitment to society, and interior peace. Francis helps us to see that an integral ecology calls for openness to categories which transcend the language of mathematics and biology and take us to the heart of what it is to be human. Just as happens when we fall in love with someone, whenever he would gaze at the sun, the moon, or the smallest of animals, he burst into song, drawing all other creatures into his praise. His response to the world around him was so much more than intellectual appreciation or economic calculus. For to him, each and every creature was a sister united to him by bonds of affection. That is why he felt called to care for all that exists. Such a conviction cannot be written off as naive romanticism, for it affects the choices which determine our behavior. If we approach nature and the environment without this openness to awe and wonder, we no longer speak the language of fraternity and beauty in our relationship with the world. Our attitude will be that of masters, consumers, exploiters, unable to set limits on our immediate needs. By contrast, if we feel intimately united with all that exists, then sobriety and care will well up spontaneously. The poverty and austerity of St. Francis were no mere veneer of asceticism, something much more radical, a refusal to turn reality into an object simply to be used and controlled.
Thank you, Father Mark, and thank you for your boss. Before we hear a word now from Largie Senior about the cage protest in Cairo, can I say that round the circle somewhere there are clipboards where you've got a chance to register your email if you have one, if you want to stay in touch with those of us who have been running today. You may want to follow up, you may not, and we promise to be careful with your signature, okay? And I've had a suggestion also that I should say to you, write to our MP about all this, or a different MP if you have a different one. We are sorry that Mr. Perkins is not with us today. Right, Margie Senior has had a busy time lately and she's taken on the fracking business in Cairo. Come on, Margie. How was it done?
Good afternoon, everyone. It's good to see so many faces here. September 2012, I'm just going to share a little bit of my experience. September 2012, we were informed that they were going to drill for gas. No mention of the word fracking, around 150 metres from my home, which is in a semi-rural but still a residential area. The parish council set up a meeting and I went along and I listened to what the parish council members had to say. And they told me that just like today, there were people with clipboards around the edge of the room should we wish to register our interest. And my husband sort of said, it's alright, love, you do enough. We'll not not doing that. And I went home. And I had a very sleepless night. What could I do about this? And the answer was, whatever I could do. And so the following day, I made contact with the Crash Council, and together we formed a group called Kalo Against Gas Extraction. Now, we were just ordinary people, a group of neighbours, a group of concerned residents, who didn't want our beautiful scenery and our enjoyment of this area to be spoiled by a profit-making company who were just going to exploit it for what they could. And while the word Rocky wasn't on the agenda, it was at the forefront of our minds. Now, I had conversations with the planning officers, and they just kept saying, "Well, you people up there just get it right, it is not fracking." And we kept saying, "Well, you can't guarantee that, and you can't guarantee that if they find that it is an area suitable for fracking, that another application won't go in. So if you don't mind, we're going to do our best to oppose this and reject it." Now, the first application was turned down by the Environmental Health Officer. They came back with a second application, which was revised, basically hunkering the application down into the ground as much as they could, which really was only a few metres. Wasn't going to make a much difference to us regarding noise pollution, air pollution, extra traffic, the safety of our children, because that is the direct pathway between the junior school and the secondary school. And they couldn't give us any concessions on any of those things. But the one thing they did do was they didn't actually serve the application correctly. So we made that objection and it went away. But it came back again. And so we fought and we carried on fighting and we ended up at County Hall on the 9th of June 2014. The planning officers had by this time recommended that application be allowed to go through. And we filled that County Council hall and we all made objections. Now we were very fortunate, we had an air pollution engineer, a noise engineer, we had a lady who networked and did very well, and they had me, who just did my best to keep it all ticking over. We were a cooperative, there were no leaders, there were no bosses, we just got together around kitchen tables whenever we could and discussed what we could do. We were only small, but when we got together we were powerful. And that's how we got through. So we got thrown out by the county councillors. Almost unanimously, there was one county councillor who said, and has recently been quoted as still saying, that he thought it was the right way to go, because that's his party's policy. Now, amongst the group of us, I had no idea what politics were. We kept it out. Our common aim was to defeat this application. And so to this day, I do not know what political alliances are of my fellow members in Kalo Against Gas Extraction. But this January, we were met with an appeal to the planning inspector. They were appealing against the county council's decision. The actual gas company, Alcade, believed that their application was right. And so we came together again, and we fought again. We requested a public inquiry within our community, and that was refused. But I have to say, when the planning inspector came, he was quite amenable, and he did allow me and a couple of other Cage members to actually take part in that inspection. And other pieces of evidence came out during that time that there were these quasi-106 agreements that we knew nothing about, which was going to mean that one of our fields adjacent to us was going to be turned into a huge lorry park. That was their 106 concession to our issue with the amount of traffic that would be going up and down the lane that is walked by children with no footpath. Now I have to say we had to wait until the 28th of October when we heard from the planning inspector, he handed out his decision and he has dismissed the appeal. And we hope, truly hope, that that is the end of the matter. But I am quite confident that if it is not, Kalo Against Gas Extraction will come together. So the message is, you know, on your own you may think, I haven't got a chance, we haven't got a chance of defeating this. But together, we are very powerful. And so, do what you can. You may think it's only small. Yes, some of us were able to make clever arguments. Other people were happy to just go out leafleting, petitioning, or whatever. It's all extremely important work, and when it comes together, it is well and truly effective. So thank you for listening to me.
Thank you to our musicians who greeted us when we came. You're going to help us with the singing, God willing. All right? And Simon is limbering up behind me. He's Simon is going to lead us in the song.
Two lines to finish with. Okay? One, two, three.